Welcome to the Global Connection, a Tel Aviv University podcast. Journey with us as we discover how TAU's academic community and friends are engaging with and helping to shape this ever-changing world.
Welcome, everyone, to the Global Connection podcast. My name is Orit Cody, and I'm a member of the Lowy International School. Joining me today is Mr. John T. Shepherd, who is currently completing his PhD at Tel Aviv University and working in geophysics under Professor Eyal Ben-Dor. John T. is originally from South Africa and recently made Aliyah, and I wanted to have you with us today to talk about your journey to Israel, to TAU, and your transition. So welcome, John T. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me today. It's such a pleasure and an honor to be here with you. So really looking forward to this interview.
Thank you. We are too. So why don't we just jump right in. To begin with, how long have you been in Israel and with us at TAU?
Most definitely. So I arrived in Israel on June 1st of last year, so 2023. And my Aliyah actually completed in August 2nd of 2023 as well.
Okay.
And I started at TAU on the 5th of June. So I literally arrived, wow, hit the ground running, and now here I am, you know, already doing an interview with you.
Amazing. Things move quickly, yeah, in Israel time zone, I can tell you that, especially in Tel Aviv. So what inspired you to make Aliyah in the first place and then jump right into your studies?
That's actually the best question ever. So the whole reason that I even made Aliyah in the first place was because I came here with birthright, 10 years ago at 18. So I originally came from San Francisco, and I flew out with a friend of mine, and here we did the journey, landed up staying in Israel for an extra 3 weeks. Yeah. And then once you stay here and you just really get the vibe, and I'm traveling across the whole country, you know, from top to bottom. And then I said, okay, one day I'm going to make the journey and, you know, make the move and make Aliyah. And it almost happened then, actually. And life just took me into other places, and as the journey continues. But finally, I was living in Croatia, mm-hmm, and I saw this opportunity with Eyal Ben-Dor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after speaking and interviewing and going through everything that was an option for me here, I said, this is my time, this is the opportunity, and I have to take it.
Amazing, amazing. I have to say, that sounds so familiar, that little bug that catches you out of nowhere when you're just visiting here and you don't expect anything, you have plans to go back home, and then boom. For me, at least, it happened with a call to my mom afterwards saying, oh, I'm staying and doing the army. But but luckily, you're here for your studies. So tell me a little bit about living in other countries. You did grow up in South Africa. You mentioned San Francisco, where I understand you did your undergrad, and then you did your master's in Croatia, and you lived in a few other places. What? Tell me about the hopping.
Yeah, it's like a little hopping express over here. I'm basically a bunny train just jumping around the world. So, basically starting in Johannesburg and growing up there, you know, it was the end of the apartheid, and, you know, after Mandela took power, which we were very much behind Mandela, mm-hmm, and to help him bring proper justice to our country. And as Mandela's journey was coming to an end, unfortunately, you can see that the presidents and the new political groups coming into play were not so, I wouldn't say on the side of Mandela, but more on the side of corruption and on the, mm-hmm, side of just doing whatever was benefiting themselves.
Of course, yeah.
And so that led to, especially Jewish people, feeling very uncomfortable, as we were a group that had moved to South Africa, you know, generally because of the Holocaust or because of World War One.
Yes.
And if it wasn't really for us being involved down there, I don't know if the apartheid would have come to an end as quickly as it did. Jewish people weren't willing to vote on the side of, you know, your stereotypical white population, because we had just been oppressed.
Interesting.
And we came to a country of oppression.
Right.
And so we had to stand against that oppression. We watched that oppression fall and watched the new rise of this amazing country, mm-hmm, that had a potential. And then to see it once again turn backwards and go down this way, people started to leave. And this was once again the journey of the Jews to find a new home or to go wherever we were kind of accepted. So many people were coming here to Israel. Mm-hmm. But for me, my family, you know, wasn't sure where we were going to go. Excuse me. And so basically what happened is that we started applying to Commonwealth countries, mm-hmm, and we got cousins and aunts, uncles, relatives, whatever, that landed up getting visas or green cards in Australia, in New Zealand, in the UK, in the US, in Canada. And so as they started to take those opportunities and to leave South Africa, sell everything, start from scratch again in these new countries, it was like, okay, we need to go and see these places as well and take the opportunity, if it arises, to also move. And that's exactly what happened. So my mother's side of the family was very quickly accepted into Australia with visas.
Okay.
And so it was natural to, let's go to Sydney, let's go look at Melbourne, let's go look at Brisbane, let's go see, you know, the eastern suburbs of Sydney, like a Jewish South African neighborhood, basically. So easy to kind of transition over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what led us to go that route.
I see.
Unfortunately, what happens is that not all countries are like, hey, here's your visa, let's also extend it, let's offer you a green card. And that's what happened there. And so between Australia, New Zealand, the UK, it just wasn't working out with paperwork. And even though we had family members there, they weren't citizens yet, so they weren't able to sponsor us.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is that we landed up striking it with the green card in the US. And so it was like a hop to Australia, stay there for a while. It was a go see the family in New Zealand. Let's see if it can work here. Okay, it's not going to work out. Okay, let's hop over now to the UK. We're in the UK now, not the best place for us. We're not fitting in the right way. Also, paperwork-wise, not sure.
Mm-hmm.
US, paperwork came through. Family decided to move down to San Diego, beautiful city, super safe. And then everything just started coming through naturally by itself. And so it was the sign, okay, bunker down here, see how it goes and play it by ear. And that's what happened.
And so your family is still settled into San Diego? Or
yeah, so spread. So families also spread between the countries I've already told you, as well as here in Israel.
Wow.
And yeah, so I have my parents are both in San Diego. My sister lives with her husband in LA.
Okay.
And yeah, I was down there and then I was like, okay, you know, I wanted to stay in California also for someone who's wasn't a citizen yet, but I was a green card holder.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy for me to stay in-state for in-state tuition fees for, you know, your university, of course. And so moving to San Francisco was a logical move for me. It was like, okay, it's far enough away from where the family is, but not too far, as well as in-state tuition fees. And so I took that opportunity to go there.
Nice.
And then it opened even more of this global drive inside of me that I just like, okay, now it's time. I want to go other places in the world. I need to go live in other countries. I need to go and see what I'm missing around the globe. And
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So that brings us back now to Israel. How is Israel, if any, different from all of these places? And how do you call it home now in comparison to these other places?
I call it home with a smile on my face. Israel is incredible. So I was living in Croatia for almost 3 years. I finished my master's degree there. I went for a master's in agriculture engineering. Mm-hmm. I was working through soil amelioration department. So doing bioremediation practices, which is based on edaphology, the interaction between soil, plants, and microorganisms. And then obviously taking environmental sciences into play, resource management, all of this. The thing is that although Croatia is such a beautiful country, they do have quite of a dark history when it comes to the Jewish people. And unfortunately, there's not very many Jews left in this area. And I wouldn't say I felt 100% safe or I didn't feel like this is a place that I could live the rest of my life.
I see.
I established a great group of friends and I met incredible people and the university was amazing to me. But it's this feeling where you just don't directly fit in. And it's not even that you don't fit in. It's that when you do bring up the side of you that's your ethnic group or that it's your religion, you want to feel comfortable, but unfortunately I experienced, you know, meeting a lot of neo-Nazis and a lot of very heavy nationalists that are very anti our people, unfortunately. And so it led me to start looking outwards. I started a PhD in Croatia as well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had started speaking to Eyal here in Tel Aviv, I said, you know what, this call to return to Israel and is something that is still pushing on my conscience. And he gave me the opportunity. He said, you know what, if you want to change over, you come. You can just come straight here and I'll offer you the position. We have the funding, we have the projects, we have everything we need. So why don't you think about it? I spoke to my supervisor at the time, Gabriel Ondrasek, in the University of Zagreb there. And he said, if this is what your heart is telling you to do and you have the funding and you have the willpower to do it again, go. So I said, okay. I accepted it. I put my process in for Aliyah through the Jewish agency. And because I was from South Africa, I thought I can go through the South African Jewish agency. No, In America, no. They were like, you have to go through the Russian one because there's a Serbo-Croatian section of the Russian Jewish agency. So I was like, is this going to take a lot of extra time? Because I know with the war going on,
right.
Was I going to be able to make Aliyah in time? Because it was December.
Uh-huh.
And Eyal is like, this project launches in June. And the universities, you know, we have summer courses starting June for the PhD program. So I need you to arrive and be ready.
Okay.
So it was like, wow. Clock is ticking. Put in for the Aliyah application. It all went through. Everything happened. And then I arrived here. The Aliyah process didn't finish in time. And I was like, okay, like I just need to hit the ground running, mm-hmm. which I did.
Mm-hmm.
Finished Aliyah in August, like I said. But in that little process of becoming an Israeli and becoming, I don't know, back to our homeland and having this experience where I've actually done it and I've returned and
mm-hmm.
this pride and joy within myself and from my family, this support. That I'm the one who chose out of the whole family to come back here and nonetheless to do a PhD.
Yes.
It was like a sense of pride and overwhelming pride and joy. And then to feel so accepted and safe and in the situation here where I never felt this way before in any other country that I've lived in. I just never had this sense over me. And
that's wonderful.
It was the first time I ever felt this way. And I can truly say I still feel this way today. I know it's very sad that the war has started and it's unfortunate that it's continuing.
Yes.
The hostage crisis is horrible.
So
everything that's happened is horrible.
It is. And that's actually where I was going to jump into. You know, you mentioned that you experienced anti-Semitism and neo-Nazism even before, way before October 7th. So we obviously know that October 7th was just the, you know, the trigger to open the floodgates. But how has your experience been here since your Aliyah before and after October 7th? Has anything changed? Has your perspective changed? Tell me about that.
That's a great question. I think that my perspective hasn't changed, actually. I feel grateful that I came before
mm-hmm.
Because I got to experience what life was like as a grown adult living my normal life here
yes.
before the 7th. And then the 7th, it's actually my mother's birthday. So I had set like an alarm to get up early that day, actually. So like 5 minutes before my alarm, the wow. sirens started and I realized that we're under attack.
Wow.
And I didn't really know what to do yet. And, you know, you're not prepared for this when you're not coming from a place where you have rockets and, you know, I don't know. You don't know what to do, really.
Absolutely.
So my neighbors came and helped me and I went with them and went to the bomb shelter. And I immediately felt like, wow, like these people don't even know me. They came to check on me. Yes. They made sure I'm okay. They took me to safety and then explained what I needed to do. And even after the 7th, I don't regret where I am today. And I don't regret what I've been, I don't know. I don't regret what I've made for my life decisions. I don't regret any of this. I feel safer being here.
It's funny. We have so many students that decided to stay or come back when the semester started for our international school. It was supposed to start really in the same week. And so many of them who either stayed or came back said, we feel more comfortable here. We want to stay here.
Yeah.
So it resonates. It absolutely does. So Jonty, tell me, being that you're from South Africa and recently, you know, where you're aware of the International Court of Justice,
yes.
Tell me what you think of that and how it feels like being a Jew and your community back in South Africa.
Yeah, of course. So I have a lot of my family still there. My grandparents are there, aunts and uncles, my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disheartening. You feel almost embarrassed when you have to tell someone that you're South African and to know that this country that was almost, if you look at it in Mandela's point of view, you know, without the Jews being present there, mm-hmm. I don't know if it would have gone the same way that it went, you know, where Mandela was able to get power at that time and the apartheid was able to end so quickly. And there was a lot of pressure from around the world, of course, but
yes.
The pressure that South Africa is feeling now from around the world is, are you really on this, you're going to take this heavy stance that you're going to support, you know, Hamas? You're not supporting the freedom of the Palestinian public from, you know, being held captive by this terrorist group. You're supporting the legitimate terrorist cell called Hamas, and calling for the plight of people.
Yes.
How can you do such a thing? And it's clear.
I don't want to distract ourselves from politics too much, but I will say that what you're saying about Mandela resonates to what the mayor of New York City mentioned. You know, he's a Black African American, and he's reminded us more than once that the Jews in America were integral to the civil rights movement, and that Martin Luther King always spoke about the Jews as facilitating that. And so it's just kind of ironically parallel and saddening.
Directly. It brings me goosebumps. You've literally given me goosebumps because
I can see
it.
Them. Yeah. And you wonder if Mandela was alive today, what he would be saying about this whole thing.
I'm sure he would definitely not be in agreement with that, and I think in actually reality, I think the entire political party would support him.
Yes,
and wouldn't allow such a thing to take place.
Yes, yes. Well, so just jumping back now to your experience here in Israel, what would you say helped you integrate? Was it the fact that you jumped right into a framework of studies? Was it the communities, like you said, your neighbors who brought you down right without even knowing you? What would you say were the key things that helped you integrate?
I would say, the two main things. One is being forced into, I'm here. I have like a few days to like just figure out something and then go to work, get right into school, get right into work, start figuring all of this out. This is like the first thing that you just have to let life begin.
Absolutely.
And that forced into a routine of just doing your normal daily life, it forces you just to become comfortable much quicker instead of having like 2 months to do nothing and you feel like lost maybe.
Yes.
And then the second thing is the overwhelming support from the community around you. In Tel Aviv, in any city, I was in Renana, I was in Kesaria, I was in all of these other places, I was up in the north, I was down south. No matter where I went, people are so welcoming and are so friendly. And you just feel this, I don't know, someone saying Shabbat Shalom to me because I it's about to be Shabbos, or Yom Tov to me because it's the beginning of the week, and they truly mean it. And when someone stops you and asks you how you are, they sit with you to talk to you about how you are and about if you need some help, or to have the Aliyah and Integration department actually reaching out and making sure that the services that you're supposed to get when you first make Aliyah in Israel have been given to you, and the Jewish agency checking in on me to make sure, like, have you established yourself? Do you need any extra support?
Amazing.
Then there's Olim Hadashim groups that are
all
together that are like, what do you need? Who do you want to go out with? What kind of stuff do you like? Do you like mountain biking? Do you like swimming? Do you like research? Do you like reading? Do you like whatever your idea is of your beautiful life? There's a group for it, and they're looking for people to join them. And it's
amazing.
This feeling of just acceptance and welcoming, and it's wonderful. And that's what made me feel comfortable here.
Yes, good. Very good. So, and from my understanding, you also identify as LGBTQ.
Yes.
So speaking of community, I assume that that also contributed. Did you feel welcome in Tel Aviv at TAU within that community?
Yes, I did actually. So it was the first thing I noticed. I walked into my supervisor Eyal Ben-Dor's office, and I see he's got a rainbow flag hanging in his office there, next to the Israeli flag and next to a bunch of other country flags. But it's just a nice feeling to see that, and then to see Israeli flags even during the protests for the government, and even now in the protests for the hostages release, to see that there's overwhelming support from the LGBTQ+ community, as well as that the events around the city and the focus here. Nobody looks at me a second way if I'm walking down the street with my partner, and nobody takes a second glance at you in the university if you're speaking about anything to do with LGBTQ+ rights or human rights in general, social justice. I think it's such an amazing feeling because, once again, unfortunately in Croatia, it's not the way it was. I've witnessed pride attacks happening during the pride event where the police turn their back on people, because they're wearing a skirt or because they're dressed in a suit, or, same-sex couples or people of the transgender community being directly targeted and the government turning a blind eye. It's horrible to see that. And it's lovely to see then in a country like here where people think that it's this horrible place and there's apartheid going on and genocide and all of these things, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful to see that the truth is that we have the most support in a community that's held down still consistently across the world. And I couldn't be more grateful for that feeling.
Wow. That's incredible. And also reassuring to know that what's said is also on the ground. And
yes.
That's the key. I think everyone who wonders about Israel or has something to say about Israel just needs to come here, you know? Just come
experience
and
it
decide
yourself.
For yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump into your research a little bit, because in the end of the day, we are a university institution. So you said that you're doing your work with Professor Eyal Ben-Dor's lab in something called remote sensing. Tell us about that a bit.
Of course, I would love to. So yes, we're working in the remote sensing lab of Tel Aviv University. Eyal Ben-Dor, I would say, is the forefront of remote sensing globally speaking. Yeah. He's one of the most cited professors or researchers in the field. I would say he's ranked in the top five, if not number one, in the field of remote sensing. And basically what remote sensing is that it's taking the calibration from a field or in-situ measurements, from field lab measurements, and correlating that to space measurements, so space-borne satellites, right? So satellites that are able to observe the Earth with spectral bands. So when I say a spectral band, I'm talking about like visible light, right? Uh-huh. You have the infrared, you have visible light, you have near infrared, you have the SWIR regions, which is going into areas that we can't see, hyperspectral, going to thermal, going to microwave, gamma, all of these different wavelengths. We can only see this small little bit of visible light, wow. Right? But in the spectrum, actually, going from 350 nanometers to 2500 nanometers, you can pick up specific signatures, a spectral signature of all matter that exists. So all matter has its own specific spectral signature. And this is based on the amount of absorption mm-hmm. or reflectance of light.
Okay.
So as we get light from the sun or from another light source, uh-huh. each type of matter will absorb some of that light and also reflect some of that light. And that creates a signature. And based on those signatures, we can calibrate satellites to be able to pick up what the actual chemical and physical properties are of things on the planet, be it soils, be it plants, be it something on Mars and looking at hydroscopic water, wow. whatever it is.
Wow.
It gives you this ability to get a different understanding of the world, mm-hmm. Because you're looking at regions that normally, you know, if we don't see it, we don't smell it, we don't taste it.
Exactly.
We can't touch it. We don't really believe that it's there all the time.
That's incredible. So describe a typical day in the lab based on what you just said.
Yeah, sure. So I'll actually tell you about a really cool project. So we're working on an EU-funded project. It's mm-hmm. called MRV for SOC. It stands for Monitoring, Reporting, and Verification for Soil Organic Carbon and Greenhouse Gas Emissions. So basically, what we're doing is that you take field measurements, like I told you, and we download satellite imagery from all different types of satellites. We use German satellites called EnMAP. We use US satellites from NASA. We use Israeli satellites with Italy, mm-hmm. French satellites, all of these different satellites. They produce different resolutions and spatial resolutions. You download these images. You then do a correction for like atmosphere. You do a correction for haze and cirrus, cloud removal, all of these things. Mm-hmm. But then you take those signatures and then you basically overlay your different softwares and you pull the spectra from the satellite images. And different satellites have different bandwidths that they are capable of monitoring at. And these different bandwidths then give you specific areas of the electromagnetic spectrum and of the spectral regions that are particular to certain substances. So, for example, carbon stock or mm-hmm. A bulk density of soil or like clay, sand, silt, pH values, all of these things that are extremely important to us in trying to create environmental awareness and protection over the environment, as well as to monitor for carbon stocks and the implementation of the carbon market, carbon credits, right?
Right.
How do we create a system that is uniformly monitoring and reporting these standards and are holding everybody to an even plateau? This is for farmers, this is for businesses, this is for governments.
So this is what I was just about to ask you. It seems like this is very incredibly relevant to the industry worldwide. Where do you see yourself after the PhD? Do you think you're continuing in the academic side and the research or into, you know, the real world?
This is the best question ever. So actually, just to kind of take a step back. So from the bachelor's degree, I landed up stopping university and going into the real world, opening business and doing all of these things. I went back into the world of academia once again, because I realized I needed to heighten my education. And also, you have to have some of these degrees behind you if you want people to take you seriously in the field that you work in. And so coming into this region now where it's like, okay, am I going to continue to the postdoc and continue in research? I will for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. I would like to continue with Eyal. And I'm just so grateful to have met him and to have a supervisor like this, and just the amount of support and enthusiasm and care that he has in this field is incredible. Yeah. But also, he is connected, and this area is connected globally. Sure. And I mean to NASA, I mean to private space companies, government organizations, all kinds of areas are starting to realize that remote sensing is the new way that we need to look at our planet and other planets around us if we want to talk about resources, wow. if we want to talk about the movement of minerals, plastics, carbon, wow. whatever you want to talk about, all matter is able to be visualized and understood via remote sensing. So because of this, I combined it with remediation and with metal contamination in soils, which is where I have a very deep understanding and also care for. And so what I would like to do is actually establish my own research, innovation and development company after I finish with all of this. And I would like to employ governments around the world to allow me to remediate contaminated sites in an environmentally friendly manner. So using plants and fungi and bacteria to break down heavy metals and heavy other types of contaminants that are in soil systems and waterways, and actually use remote sensing to allocate resources towards them, determine geospatially where these regions are actually affecting and how it's being affected, and then also to watch as the decline of this heavy contaminated area slowly gets shrunk with the use of bioremediation practices.
That sounds so fascinating, Jonty, really. And like you said, like the industry and TAU, especially being at the heart of the startup nation and the heart of so many innovative technologies, it makes clear sense that the academic research that you're doing is going to spill right into the industry and vice versa. And did you know they even have, we even have a VC on campus, Tau Ventures, that promotes amazing entrepreneur thinkers like you.
So, yes, I did see some of this actually. And I also saw, even for traveling for environmental reasons, there's actually an initiative on the university grounds, which is done actually through the international school. Uh-huh. And it's if you are working for towards bettering the climate of the earth and for climate change, they actually will give you scholarships.
Absolutely.
For travel and for funding as long as you're working in this area. So
yes,
there's a huge push right now for global soils and for the green era is upon us, basically, is what I'm saying.
Indeed.
You know, and we are all aware that we need to do something about it to fix this earth.
Yesterday.
Because we're stuck here. Exactly. Yesterday, the day before that.
Yes.
So I think that now that people are really behind it and understand it and the funding is coming through for these projects, we're going to see great leaps forward and strides in directions that we never thought were possible.
Absolutely. I have to say, Jonty, you're super inspiring. Your work is super inspiring. And I'm sure that those listening would also be inspired to hear any final thoughts and suggestions on someone who's interested in making Aliyah, moving to Israel, and or coming into TAU and continuing their education here.
Most definitely. So I would like to say for sure, if someone is thinking about coming to TAU and making Aliyah, it's the greatest pairing that you can have. It's like the wine and cheese, you know. It's
hummus and pita.
Yeah, hummus and pita. If you are Shomrei Shabbos, that's okay too, no problem. But the deal is basically this: it's if you have the opportunity to come to Israel and you have the opportunity to make Aliyah,
yeah.
you know, you need to make sure that it's the place for you. You need to be strong. You need to be able to be independent. You need to also be able to see that there's a support system that you need to tap into.
Yes.
The university will definitely offer you that support. And then people in the community, like I said earlier, will also offer you that support. However, they need to come and see the country. They need to believe what is actually happening here. with their own eyes,
yes,
and not take in what the news and what social media platforms are saying about Israel. Secondly, they need to come to the university and see the gorgeous grounds that mm-hmm. we work and live on every single day here. Mm-hmm. The forwardness of the campus and the forwardness of the people that are on this campus. I mean, it's such a diverse and mixed community here, and everybody is working towards these goals of higher research and higher education. Forefronts of science are taking place right here every single day. Mix that with the beautiful life in Tel Aviv. There's no reason not to make Aliyah, or just to come here for vacation and then accidentally stay for a little too long, you know?
I'm always looking for good recruiters on my marketing team, Jonty. If you want to think about a career change, you're
here. Careful what you wish for. I'll be handing out visas like it's nobody's business.
Absolutely. No, you couldn't have said it better. And the package is really what it's about, and the family, and the sense of belonging and feeling safe, and that you're going somewhere. So with that, I really enjoyed our conversation, and I want to wish you the best of luck, both in you're still quite new as an Olé, but you've done so much, and also with your research. So it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much again. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.